Anthony J. Hilder.
Doctor, you teach administrators or future administrators at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. Is that correct?
Yep.
Could you tell me?
I try.
What?
I try.
You
not
try.
Clear whether, it's not clear whether they learn anything, but I work at it.
Now, could you tell us some of the individuals that you have taught that have wound up in key positions in government?
I don't think it's fair to my students to identify some as winding up in key positions. They all seem to go and do something important and useful.
Yeah.
The Kennedy School has all sorts of distinguished graduates, including the mayor of San Antonio and a whole batch of fairly senior policy analysts and managers in federal government.
In the Reagan administration?
Probably a few, and some of our faculty as well.
Now, your faculty is at Harvard University.
Right.
And you taught at MIT for 6 or 7 years?
Right.
The
Urban Studies Department.
Yes. Now, we have in Oxnard, California, a city manager form of government. And we have been talking about the problems that exist with this here in the Gold Coast area.
Uh-huh.
We find that from 1970 to 1980, some 30,000 elected posts in the United States disappeared. And they were essentially taken over by administrators. So we have people that are responsible, not to the public at large, but to the city council who appoints them in city after city throughout the United States.
Right. The theory is that the council is accountable to the people.
But like in Oxnard, the city council gets $400 per month, city councilman,
uh-huh.
Councilwoman. The mayor gets $600 a month, but the city administrator, I mean, the fellow who's CEO, the man in charge,
right.
Really is the city manager, and he gets $80,000 a month.
Gee, you have a job application?
Not $80,000, $80,000 a year, yes.
Well, still sounds like a pretty good job.
Can you tell us just how extensive this city manager form of government is in the United States?
Well, it's very extensive. It's one of the, I don't know if it's the most common, but it's certainly one of the most common and a conventional way to set up a municipal government. I did not know what you just told me about this erosion of elected officials. I assume this is all at the local level, these
yes.
30,000. People seem to like it, or they think they're going to like it.
Well, there's a ballot measure, in fact, coming up this November to eliminate the post of city treasurer. In other words, having it abolished as an elective office, and it would then go under the auspices of the city manager.
Mm-hmm. What arguments are put forward to this?
Well,
as soon as you turn one of these elected jobs into an appointed one, it immediately costs you a whole bunch of money and salary.
Well, that's exactly what will happen, of course, and the alternatives 1, 2, and 3 were written out by the local city manager, who I had on the air here. His name is David Mora. He prepared and approved this items 1, 2, and 3 before the city council. When I asked him on the air about it, however, he said that he didn't remember, who made the suggestion.
Uh-huh.
And yet we found an item out of the the records down here indicating that he's the one who prepared it and approved of it. So he has a very, very short memory. Like so many city managers across the country do. When you have an individual graduate, just what position would they be prepared to take? Could they go on like a Henry Kissinger to become Secretary of State? Or?
Well, we're still hoping for a Secretary of State. We haven't had one yet. I'm not sure that we've had a cabinet secretary. You must understand that the Kennedy School of Government was organized only in mid-1970s. Although Harvard has had a Master of Public Administration degree under a shared department administration, the Kennedy School itself is our newest professional school. And so we, you have to give us a few years before you can expect cabinet officers. Our graduates start out in usually policy analysis or junior management positions in federal, state, and local government, and many in the private sector and nonprofits. A few pursue elected politics, and we're trying to encourage more to do that. Most become public managers at various times. Sometimes administrators, sometimes staff people.
You're considered to be an intellect, a man with really superior intelligence, especially, you know, doing what you're doing, teaching public administrators. What background, tell me some of the things that you read, something about your personal life.
I read newspapers. That's a difficult question. I have a wife and a child and a dog and another child on the way. When I'm not working on work, I'm renovating one house or another.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I'm sitting in my overalls with dirty fingernails and doing that today. As far as journals are concerned, I like to read the Journal of Policy and Management, The Economist, Popular Science from time to time.
Now, you're also an architect?
Well, I'm not. I don't practice architecture. I was trained as an architect and engineer and wound up teaching at the Kennedy School by a rather odd career path. Should mention that one of the nice things about the Kennedy School is that everybody there got in sort of sideways. We have relatively few people whose degrees are in government or political science. Instead, the place is full of economists, engineers, the odd architect, a psychiatrist, and other such misfits. Thanks for a wonderful working environment.
So, you really have an extensive background in mathematics.
My thesis involves a lot of order statistics, mainly in operations research.
Now, when a student comes into your class, are they preparing to be to get a doctorate themselves?
Occasionally. About 5 to 10 out of 150 of our Master of Public Policy degree candidates goes into the PhD program. But that's quite selective. Only a few of them do that. We take a few people directly for a doctorate. For the most part, the degree programs are masters, that is, professional degrees. We have one program for mid-career people who've been in government for 10 to 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and one program for pre-career students who are fresh out of college or nearly so. That's a two-year program.
Now, you've traveled pretty much around the United States and the world?
I don't know if I've traveled pretty much.
Well, I mean, you've been out to, you know, California, San Francisco, Los Angeles?
Yes.
We have another situation down here where elected officials are appointed, they're elected at large rather than by through the councilmatic district.
Mm-hmm.
This really eliminates a lot of the opportunities that minorities in the area, in areas like Oxnard,
mm-hmm.
Have to get into positions of power to really control their own destiny.
Yes, it's really quite mystifying why that system should persist. We had a situation like that in Boston, where our city council was elected at large and turned about half the, I think somewhat more than half the council seats were changed to district representation in the last couple of years. And it substantially changed the politics of the city, I think, for the better. The problem with that large election of a legislature is that if there's a coalition that's capable of electing a person but there exists in the town a coalition, whatever type, is capable of electing people who have one set of views,
mm-hmm.
then it's obviously capable of electing all of them. In other words, let's say your town is divided 60% liberal and 40% conservative.
Yeah.
You're very likely to see a city council that doesn't turn out 60% liberal with 40% conservative. It turns out to be 100% liberal because the 60% liberal voters, with all the best intentions in the world, if you have a seven-person council, just elect seven people like them.
So the majority eliminates the minority.
Yeah, that's quite typical of that large representation.
Well, that can happen in a democracy, but if we have a more Republican form of government and people are elected from the various districts, this prohibits that situation from occurring. Of course, there is a lawsuit by a fellow named Rolando Rios, I believe he's out of San Antonio, an attorney,
mm-hmm.
against the city of Oxnard coming in the very, very near future. Michael Henry O'Hare, can you take a, just sort of sit back and relax, because I want to tell our listeners about the Pollo Bravo.
And now, telling it like it is, Anthony J. Hilder.
This is Anthony J. Hilder, and on the line we have Michael Henry O'Hare, a professor of, well, of government, really, at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. A man who has taught many public administrators throughout the United States how to do it, how to run the government. Some people call the government simply a bureaucracy that's out of hand, Michael. What comment would you have to them?
Well, I think that's too much of a generalization. In the first place, no government is just a bureaucracy. There's some kind of political responsiveness built into any functioning government. It may be badly organized and it may be feeble, but it's always there. The bureaucratic element of government is inevitable because there's work to be done and people have to be organized to do it. Whether it's out of hand or not is a judgment that's so broad. It turns into an ideological.
Let's take the administration of Ronald Wilson Reagan. He promised to balance the budget by 1984, but yet at this particular time he has gone considerably over budget. In fact, every budget that he has submitted to the Congress has outdone the last one. And by the time he leaves office, he will have tripled the national debt. In other words, the combined national debt of every other president from George Washington through Jimmy Carter collected and together is enormous. And if you triple that while promising to balance the budget and lower the national debt, that would certainly indicate that the government was a bureaucracy that was out of hand.
Yes, it's not entirely fair to quote those figures since they're computed with dollars that aren't corrected for inflation. The economic obligation, that is the value of the goods and services represented by that debt, has tripled. But it's gotten worse. Reagan and his people will be the first to tell you that whether they knew it or not when they took office, no president can single-handedly balance a budget or reduce the national debt.
That's what he told us that he was going to do. That was his promise to the electors here in the United States.
That's true, but remember we started this conversation trying to see whether bureaucracy was getting out of hand, and you're now talking about an elected official who is learning on the job how the system works, which always happens to elected officials.
Well, I mean, if no one has served in a position of being president, I mean, it's always, he's always in a position of learning on the job, so to speak.
I just don't think you can attribute attribute Reagan's failure to deliver on his tax and debt promises to the bureaucracy. There's a Congress in there that votes the budget and votes spending bills and votes entitlements.
Yeah.
And there are citizens who vote for the congressman, and there are public works and poor barrel projects and programs of special interest to regions, every one of which looks like good government where they work and looks like a boondoggle to the rest of us.
Well, let me ask you a political question. Are you a Republican?
Well, now in Massachusetts, that's a very difficult question. Our Republican Party is so small that they don't contest a good many of the seats In the town where I live, Republicans are practically unheard of, and local administration is nonpartisan. I think how I vote is my business. And I'd invite, I mean, if you really want to know the answer to that, I think what I'd have to invite you to do is to read some of my papers and the programs I advocate, to decide if they sound like Republican programs. And I'd be happy with the judgment of other people on that.
Well, I was, trying to figure out just where you were coming from.